It's Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. It's May Day, and it's also International Workers' Day. More than 80 countries around the world will celebrate the working class today and the bitter and often bloody fights for labor rights and laws that most of us now enjoy, including the 8-hour workday and weekends. The date was chosen to commemorate the Haymarket Massacre just south of us in Chicago that occurred on May 4th in 1886. The fight for the 8-hour workday had been taking place around the country, and Milwaukee wasn't immune to the conflict between businesses and workers. Monday, May 5th marks the 128th anniversary of the incident known as the Bayview Tragedy. Privately owned militia shot and killed striking workers at Milwaukee Iron Company's rolling mills. It was not a spontaneous event. May 1st just marks the beginning of the turmoil that led up to the tragedy. Ken Germanson, who was president emeritus of the Wisconsin Labor History Society, explains to Lake Effect's Eleanor Peterson how the turmoil began.
Well, May 1st had been set at that time in 1886 as kind of a nationwide goal, by which time a lot of the labor movement had hoped to establish the principle of the 8-hour day in many of the factories and industries throughout the country. And that had been a major goal for some years. That really dates way back. And it had been rarely attained except in various things. So kind of led by the Knights of Labor and a few other of the national organizations at that time, they said, we're going to have it by May 1st or else we'll have general strikes throughout the country. And there were indeed a number of general strikes that occurred on May 1st. And just as a quick aside, May 1st became the National Workers' Holiday, which has been recognized throughout the world as the Workers' Holiday, except in the United States where we've selected Labor Day, which is a result of concerns back in the 1890s when they were looking at this stuff, that May 1st was identified too much with the more radical causes.
May 1st was a national decision, but how was Wisconsin overall? Did they seem to reform by May 1st and say, you know, let's do the 8-hour day, or were they more or less not wanting to follow that?
Well, in fact, very few places followed it, so there were strikes throughout the country. Mm-hmm. Baltimore, Chicago, St. Louis. And actually, Milwaukee was probably one of the more active sites because we had two efforts going, one on the north side and one on the south side, because we were by then already a very industrialized city. And the industrial, you know, revolution, as great as it was taking a great toll on working people who worked an average of 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. And they didn't have any coffee stations or lounge breaks.
And then was this also before the child labor movement?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, there were child laborers involved and so forth. I mean, all of the horrors of the early industrial age were still being foisted upon workers. And they were getting about a dollar a day, which, you know, forced them to, you know, live in cramped quarters and squalid conditions, yeah.
So were there other strikes happening around the city at that time then?
Yes. Well, actually, the plants were basically closed in the north side by mainly German workers. This was a very ethnic city, the north side being German, the south side Polish and some of the other ethnic entities. They were closed. The breweries were closed, and some of the other shops up there were closed. And on the south side, virtually all of the shops were closed, with the exception of the Bayview Rolling Mills, which was at that time our city's, you know, largest employer with over 1,500 workers.
So let's talk about the massacre itself. Was this intended to be a peaceful riot?
Well, yeah. In fact, I kind of resent your use of the word riot, if you don't mind,
sure.
Because that's would indicate that the workers were violent. Mm-hmm. And no, they had no guns. It just wasn't done in those days, frankly. And they started with peaceful marches on the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th of May. and they had gradually emptied out all of the shops on the south side, all of the major ones, with the exception of the rolling mills. And so they were marching towards those mills every day to try to urge the workers to come out or to force management to just close the shops and, you know, basically have the workers join them. Well, that didn't happen. On May 3rd, seeing all this, Governor Jeremiah Rusk called out the state militia and said, well, we're going to protect this employer. And on the 4th, the troops showed up in front of the headquarters. Now, the workers marched in, and then one of the companies was surrounded by the troops, and they got upset, and so they fired guns into the air. And the workers responded by throwing rocks and a few things like that. So there was some violence on the 4th, which, as I recall, was a Tuesday. On Tuesday night, May 4th, the Haymarket event happened in Chicago, and that was widely publicized, and that was a rally for working people where a bomb had been thrown, nobody knows by whom, and killed 8, including four police officers, plus the others were, you know, people who were there at the rally. That alarmed Governor Rusk and the industrialists and the corporate chieftains here in Milwaukee. So they were very alert and brought in some more companies of state militia for May 5th. So what happened then, on May 5th, everybody gathered at St. Stanislaus Church on South 5th and West Mitchell Streets and marched to the mill, about a mile and a half march, east on Mitchell, south on Kinnickinnick, and east on Bay Street. And the militia was stationed up on top of the hill, which is approximately where DeMarini's pizza place is. And the marchers came up Bay Street, which is lower level. And at 200 yards out or further, the colonel ordered the marchers to stop. Well, there was no loudspeakers in those days, so they didn't hear and they kept marching. And at that point, well, the governor had given them orders to stop the marchers under any cause. So at that point, the colonel said to his men, pick out your man, take aim, and kill him, and ordered the volley of shots into the crowd. They ended up killing 7, including a man feeding his chickens in his backyard and a 12-year-old boy who skipped school to see all what was going on. And, of course, that ended the march right at that point, and everybody scattered, and there were wounded, we don't know how many. So that was the massacre itself.
So I read someplace that the workers had its own kind of a militia in a way. Did they have an army or support?
No, you may have confused that with the militia troops that were brought in, because the militia was composed of citizens. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, the Kosciuszko Guards were one of the groups, and they were Polish. So it was their neighbors that were walking in front of them, and there's considerable belief that there would have been more dead, but most of them fired over the heads of the marchers.
So who was Paul Gratkow, and how was he involved?
Well, Paul was one of the leaders. He was a Knights of Labor leader, and he had become a very major speaker. He was a socialist and believed very strongly in these causes. So he was one of the leaders.
So then what was his aftermath? Because I saw that he was arrested.
Well, he was arrested, and it was, in fact, they arrested, I believe, more than 30 of the marchers. They didn't hold them very long, a little different than Chicago, because down there, which is a story all unto itself, they arrested 8 and sentenced them to hang. Just Some of them weren't even at the site at the time, but they arrested them for inciting. They were claimed to be anarchists or terrorists, which was the equivalent of what we would think of as communists in the worst order today, or shall we say the terrorists that some people fear now. So people were scared at that time about anarchists, and four of them were hanged, one died in jail, and three were pardoned. And that was very tragic. Here in Wisconsin, they did arrest some of them, but at that time, the sentiment was totally on the side of the militia, not on the side of the working people, because the media at that time called these things riot, and they indicated that this was an unruly bunch of people, and actually terms like riffraff, well, that wasn't the exact term, but they used terms indicating that these people were no good. But there are forebears in this community, our great-grandparents, as it were. My own grandfather at that time, as far as I can tell, was employed at the rolling mills. My family's basically from a Bayview, though I grew up elsewhere, and I now live in the area. So, I feel very close to all of this.
Definitely. That must have been how you got involved with...
Yeah, that was it. I was among a handful of us that started to begin to hold this event in 1986, which was the 100th anniversary, and we did a number of things. Among our participants, all the way through up until his death in 2005 or 6, was a former Milwaukee mayor, Frank Zeidler. And Frank was, and he spoke at every one of our events, and everybody wanted to hear what he wanted to say up until his death at age 93.
Wow.
And this was one of his major events, because we wanted people to remember this event because it was part of our struggle for the 8-hour day. We're still struggling to, in effect, keep the 8-hour day. And why we think this is relevant today is, well, first of all, there's some state legislators that would like to screw up the 40-hour week. There's other things that would extend working hours for people without having to pay overtime or break state laws. So that's a very immediate issue as to why this is important, because working people basically died for this. And the other reason this is important is because what this set off after 1886, in spite of the fact that it was an immediate failure, they didn't get the 8-hour day basically until the Fair Wage and Hour Standards Act of 1938, 52 years later. But what it did symbolize and spur on people that they, if they got together collectively as a group, they could make enough noise and start making changes. And sure enough, the leadership after the thing here in Milwaukee urged folks to get involved in politics. And they did. They created a People's Party that took over the Common Council that very November of 1886. They were later beat out by a fusion between the Democrats and Republicans. And for a period of nearly two decades, this fusion ran Milwaukee with great corruption. And that ended with the election of the first socialist mayor in Emil Seidel in 1910. And we continued to have a series of socialist mayors until Frank Zeidler's retirement from the office in 1960. And there were some breaks in there of 2 and 3 years of other mayors, but the folks went back to socialism. And Milwaukee gained a reputation through all those years and kept it of creating an efficient, effective, and dedicated government. And John Gerter, who's a prominent Milwaukee historian, claims that a lot of those reform activities developed as a result of this event in 1886. That's why we think this is worth saluting. Every year we get around 300 or more folks gather in around us. We have about an hour ceremony at the corner of South Superior and East Russell, just up from the Coast Guard station there. We hope the weather will be warmer than what we've had, so we make for a good day. Also, at our event on Sunday, we'll have a reenactment of the actual tragedy put on by the Milwaukee Public Theater. We'll have a cast of not thousands, but 20s, and there'll be some larger-than-life-size puppets taking over the words of Jeremiah Rusk, who some of the participants will boo, and of Paul Grotkow. We certainly welcome folks out there for that because that's become a very popular feature of these annual events.
It sounds like it.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Ken, for joining us on Lake Effect. You have given us so much knowledge about this significant event in Milwaukee history.
Thank you very much.
Ken Germanson is President Emeritus of the Wisconsin Labor History Society. This year's commemoration of the Bayview tragedy will be held on Sunday at 3 p.m. on the corner of South Superior Street and East Russell Avenue. Germanson spoke with Lake Effect's Eleanor Peterson. We'll take one last break, and then we'll have an in-studio concert with guitarists Peter Lang and Lucas Michalides. Stick around for more of Lake Effect on WUWM right after this.